Well, let's talk about sex. How about that? We wait till the end of the day to talk about this. I tell you, this is one of the most difficult things to talk about in a sense of the church, because you've got some people who are very prudish, and you got others who are very pornographic. And somewhere in between, you have to give a wonderful, hopefully biblical balance of thinking this through. I want to start this out by sharing. I was pastoring one time a Chinese church, and I know that sounds weird, but the church was 100% Chinese, and the goal was to turn it into a multicultural church. And so at the time, the pastor called me in. It was primarily Mandarin speaking, and we had one English service, and the rest was Mandarin. And so they would take my sermons and translate it into the Mandarin language. And so first service was English, second service was Mandarin. And so every quarter, the co-pastor and I, we would switch back and forth. And the church was growing well, and we began to move it into being multicultural. It became Anglo, Asian, African-American, and Hispanic. It was really growing. And as we started having small groups and getting to know each other and build, some things started to pop up. So my wife said to me, "Hey, I need you to talk to so-and-so. Him and his wife were having some sex problems." And I'm thinking, I don't want to talk to a man about his sex life. That's just, I'm not feeling that. That's like, that's a wrap, man. So I said, she's like, "Honey, you really need to talk to him." I'm like, "Steve, how you doing, man? Pastor, I'm doing great, great. How's the family, man? Doing well. Children, well, work, well. How's sex life? Great. Okay, man, good to see you, man." Maybe I talked to Steve. He said it was all right, so She just waved her head. Another situation comes up. She says, "You need to talk to John because I've talked to his wife, and yeah, they're having some sex problem." I'm thinking, are all y'all doing is talking about sex? What is going on? And so this happened about three or four times to the point I said, okay, we have a problem in the church with our married couples with this sex issue, and I'm going to share with you some of the things we talked about. Some things we got a little bit more specific that I can't share here, but if you ever want to go there, we do marriage conferences where we speak with the men and the women, and we get into the biology of sex, and we go a little bit deeper for husband and wives. But what I did was, I said, "I tell you what," and I got up before the congregation, I said, "Listen, I know normally we have small groups here and we do this, but this weekend we're having married-only small groups at my house, and we're going to deal with sex." There were people I hadn't seen in church in months. And I'm opening the door, and all these people just kept coming in. I'm thinking, man, this is crazy. So we have a two-story house, and so I took the men upstairs, and my wife had the ladies downstairs. I said, "Men, you're here because you've not been telling the truth about your sex life. And we need to have some serious conversation." Well, as I'm doing this, the women are giggling downstairs. So every man is listening, trying to figure out, is that my wife? Is she giggling? But, you know, I'm saying, "Dude, let's not worry about what's happening down there. That's being handled, okay? I need you guys to focus with me, and we need to have a real talk." And as we began to talk about, when I'm going to share with you some of these things about sexuality and sex and understanding it from a biblical perspective, it changed the trajectory of the church. And I can remember as we start talking about it and helping couples understand here is what God intended and how we should be operating, I saw people hugging and holding hands and smiling in church that was normally frowning. I'm thinking, wow, we have to go there. And I thought, you know, as a shepherd, sometimes you don't want to talk about those type of issues, but we have to. And if we're going to love people, if everyone else is talking about sex, why not the church? Did God not create sex? Did God not have a plan for it? Why are we not promoting, the biblical perspective of God's plan? And so it changed my perspective for years to come. And I just would go and one of the things my wife and I do in premarital counseling, we will save the sex talk until the week or the weekend before the individuals are to get married. And so we go places that you don't expect a pastor and wife to go. So my wife would take the wife, I'd take the husband, and we just get straightforward. We talk about the biology of it. And you can see him squirm. And I said, I know it's weird, your pastor talking about orgasm and body parts and all that. I know it's uncomfortable, but please understand, God wants me to help you to have a wonderful sex life with your wife-to-be. And if you could think in terms of reality of how God has orchestrated husband and wife, this could be the start of a wonderful marriage as you learn that sex has to be bigger than your personal passion. It has to be something bigger than that. And as we started to walk in that, and it's so funny, we'd have couples. There was one couple, they were in Puerto Rico, and they called us and said, hey, can we talk? Something isn't working. My wife and I are like, man, did you ever think that this is what pastoring is going to be about? You know, Pastor, I'm a little nervous. I don't know. Hey, calm down, son. Calm down. You know, think about this. Remember I told you this? My wife is on the phone with her. Remember I told you this? So then we get a call a couple of weeks later. It worked. It was wonderful. Yeah, praise the Lord. We don't really need a lot of details. Glad things are going well for you. Hallelujah for the Lamb of God. Good. But in the reality of these things, you have people who maybe not understand it or maybe have had some bad things happen. You know, my oldest daughter that we adopted at 18, she was raped and molested by her stepfather for 8 years. I had to help her to begin to have a biblical view of sex because she was introduced to sex in a way that is totally counteractive. So I had to help her understand, as your father who now is going to love you the way a man is to love you and not take advantage of you, I've got to teach you some realities about men that's different than what you've experienced. But more than that, I've got to help you to develop a biblical view of sex that counteracts what you have experienced. And that's the hardest thing when you encounter people who have had a negative encounter with sex, to help them to see that is not the totality of what God intended. That is something you've experienced. And watch this, you can grow through that as you have gone through that. And you can have just a quality of sex life with your spouse as if you've never had that happen to you before. But in all of it, we have to get down to God's design for sex and marriage. One of the things I've learned over the years, when you take sex outside of its design, you create problems and you create things that will destroy you and the relationship. But when you keep sex the way God intended, it can be a blessing to everybody, and it can be fulfilling for husband and wife. And it doesn't matter what has happened to you. What matters is, are you willing to submit to God's standards? And then you can experience God's blessing as it relates to the relationship. So with that being said, I want us to take a quick look at this biblical view of sexuality. First, let's look at communication. Number one, many people have a hard time talking about sex to one another. It's something that, unfortunately, we have been taught it should be in the dark. It should be those things that are not spoken, when really sex was created by God and should be in the light, and we should be talking about it from a biblical, God-honoring perspective. But secondly, we'll discover that keeping silent keeps us ignorant and potentially leads to negative sexual health outcomes. Letter C, lacking basic sex information also makes talking about sex all the more scary, not knowing what you don't know. You know, I try to, you know, ease into these realities with men and help them understand that, listen, I know that you think sex was for you. I know you do. And I hope that your goal of marriage is not so you can have sex. Because technically, sex is for your spouse. And she must be thinking the same thing. See, when sex is for you, you get into all kinds of things like masturbation and porn and everything else. When sex is for your spouse, you consider, how do I preserve myself for their satisfaction? And when that changes, you start to recognize that God created this wonderful thing between the two of you to enjoy, but thinking about the other person more than you're thinking about yourself. And that's difficult because we live in such a sex-craved world that does not recognize that all of life shouldn't be summed up in sex. Sex is a part of marriage, not the goal of our existence. And when you worship it, you make it the central focus of your life. And when that happens, you will do things that will destroy you and others. I want you to look with me at the perspective of sex. And I want you to look at point number two, and this kind of will help us to think this through. When we think about the perspectives of sex, the first thing I want you to see is this. Sex must be held in high regard and preserved for the marriage bed only. Hebrews 13:4 talks about marriage being held in honor, and let the marriage bed not be defiled, for fornicators and adulterers God will judge. And what I've noticed over the years, people who take sex outside of that design tend to have a lot of times difficulties in marriage behind this issue because they have not adjusted their attitudes, have not adjusted their hearts, their agendas to function in the marriage with sex being something that is to be for the glory of God and the benefit of the spouse. And what I've discovered a lot of times is when it says God will judge, it's not so clear if that judgment is the bema judgment or if that judgment are the consequences that come about as a result of taking sex outside of marriage. What I have seen over the years of counseling people is that there's a lot of consequences of sex outside of marriage. And there are a lot of things that people are experiencing because of it that would they confess, repent, replace, it could change their lives. Two couples who ended up committing adultery and getting married, what do you think their biggest issues are in their relationship? Trust and sex. She sees another man. He's wondering, why are you looking? She sees him looking at somebody. And it's interesting, what I've discovered is, even as singles, when singles treat a brother and sister like a lover, they are defiling that which was meant to be held in high regard. What single people sometimes misunderstand is your brother or sister was never meant to be your lover. And the best friends make the best lovers, not the other way around. And when you learn to keep the marriage bed by being undefiled and saying, listen, I need to see you as my sister, not as my sex object, then I learn to treat you holy, which means that when we get together, the union is so much more special. Why? Because I didn't reduce you to an object to satisfy me. I saw you as a sister or brother to keep holy and not awaken desires until they so come. This kind of stuff we have to begin to reverse in the minds of people to recognize the marriage bed must be held in high regard. Look with me at letter B. Sex is more than the physical act in that it joins you to another person on a spiritual level. Now, this is what most people don't understand. In 1 Corinthians 6, when he talks about, you know, joining yourself to a harlot, you become one with the harlot. The reason why sex is so powerful is not just a physical act. What happens is two people are becoming so connected, not just sexually, but there is a union, the two becoming one. I'm joining myself to another individual, and as a result, there is a connecting of us that was never meant to be divided. And what I tell a lot of people, that is why many of you, and you know what I'm talking about, have stalkers in your life. You did something you shouldn't have did with that person, and they are losing their minds now that you want to break it off. What has happened? You've had sex with some man or woman you shouldn't have had sex with, and now you're saying, you know what, we shouldn't have done this, I need to separate. And they're going, no, I can't live without you, I can't breathe without you, I just got to have you in my life. And you're like, what in the world happened? You put something together that never should have been joined. Because sex was meant to bring you close. But under the auspices that this person is going to be mine for the rest of my life. And we keep playing with fire because we keep joining ourselves to people that we weren't designed and we're not committed to, and it keeps creating emotional and physical issues. Why? Because who I have sex with was supposed to be my spouse and my spouse only, and it was meant to build us together emotionally, spiritually, physically, in every aspect possible, because the two are becoming one. That is why sex is so powerful, because it's not just a physical act. And because people don't think about it in these terms, they don't understand that they are playing with fire when sex is not in the way that God intended. Shall I, it said, join myself to a harlot and become one with her? The idea there is God never intended for you to have sex with anyone other than your spouse. Think about a marriage. What's the first thing that goes when people start fighting? Sex. Guess what my assignment is to help people make up? Sex. Couples all the time, hey, and I'll get the talking and they're mad and they, you know, that kind of, okay, well then I'll ask, how's your sex life? One looks up, one looks down, they start looking at their watches, and I say, well, here's your assignment. You need to have sex this week. I don't want to know when, why, how. You just need to have sex this week. Well, Pastor, why? I said, because that's going to break the walls down and build a bridge so you guys can begin to talk again. Because God intended for you to be one with your spouse. So part of this reconciliation, I need you to get back to what you've dropped so that you can begin to have and build, because sex is not just a physical thing. It was meant to bring you and your spouse together. Here's the third thing I want you to see about this. Sex is not the purpose of marriage, but a good marriage will provide the means for genuine sexual satisfaction. What does that mean? A marriage doesn't revolve around sex, but sex was meant to be a good product or a good thing for the marriage. And what I find fascinating, again, is you find a marriage where there is a lack of sex, you find that there's a lack of closeness. Now, here's what I'm not saying. Sex always means closeness. I'm saying that sex is a helpful tool in the closeness of husband and wife. And where there's a problem with sex, you will find that there could be other problems that sex is unfolding and bringing to light. Does that make sense? And what I ask couples as we start to work through counseling together, I don't want details. I just need to know, is this a fulfilling sex life? And if not, why? And that's when you begin to see the reality of one's worship of sex, one's reality of the fear of sex, or whatever may be going on. It begins to expose where people's hearts are. Because again, sex is not the issue. It is an indication that there is an issue. Does that make sense to everybody? And so as we begin to have a biblical understanding of this, it can begin to revolutionize how we see and walk through that with our spouses. Letter D, sex outside of marriage leads you to be in conflict with God's will for your life. Let me share with you four things that I've come to understand about sex outside of marriage that are helpful for us to think about. And if what you see these things with people, whether it be porn or whatever it is, you'll discover that these four things are a issue that is revealing something else. Number one, when someone is having sex outside of marriage, they have a hunger spiritually that they're trying to satisfy sexually, and it won't happen. Number two, when someone has sex outside of marriage, they have a hurt somewhere in their hearts, and they're trying to find comfort through sex instead of dealing with it with Christ. Number three, when people have sex outside of marriage, not only is there a hunger or a hurt, sometimes there is hate. there is anger. And because of the anger and the pain that the anger brings, they're trying to use sex as a means to cover and deal with their anger. And then sometimes people are horrified. There's so much fear, and because the fear makes them uncomfortable, sex is a means to satisfy or overcome these things. And what I've discovered is where a person is hungry, where a person is hurting, where a person is hating, where a person is horrified, and sex becomes an avenue to address it, things are out of order. And if you just listen to people long enough, they will expose one of these categories. I feel the need to have sex. Why? I'm hungry. What are you hungry for? See, the bread of life has not become that which you can be satisfied through. So you're trying to satisfy a soul hunger through a sexual sin. It will never, ever happen. Are you guys understanding where I'm going? And for many people, because they don't understand these realities, they are destroying themselves and even getting married thinking that now I can have legal sex. Not understanding that if your goal is to have legal sex, you're still objectifying the woman or the man that you're hooking up with, and it's too much about you, and you're having sex outside of God's design. So for you and I, we have to really come to terms with setting a biblical reality when we think about the context of sex. Now, from that, let's look at the parameters of this. As we've talked about so far, the communication, the perspective, I want to talk about the parameters of sex. Because the problem that we tend to have, if we don't know God's design for it and what God meant for sex to bring, then we'll misuse it and not operate the way God intended. If you notice the parameters, letter A, sex is designed to unite a man and a wife together according to their corresponding differences. Watch this, to produce something of value between them and through them in what? Marriage only. Let's let that sink in for a moment. Let me read that one more time. Sex is designed to unite a man and wife together to their corresponding differences to produce something of value between them and through them in the marriage only. Be fruitful and multiply. That's something of value. The two shall become one. That's something of value. Husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way. Proverbs 5, let her breast satisfy you, intoxicate you. That's something of value. God intended for sex to be more than just an act, but to bring something of value. And we're going to talk about even more what that value is in B and C and D. So notice letter B says, there was no other creature by which God intended man to join in sexual union with, but his what? Wife. That's why it says there was no helper found for Adam. So as he was naming the animals, every animal had a partner except for whom? Adam. So guess what that meant? He was never meant to have sex with anything other than his corresponding difference. That's why bestiality is so disgusting and outside of God's design, because that's not his corresponding difference. It brings no value having sex in that manner. It's outside of God's order for man and woman. Does that make sense to you guys? The next thing we see, sex with any other creature or being is considered a perversion. Man is not to have sex with any other man or any other animals or any other woman that is not his wife. Leviticus. So what is the reality? God never intended for us to have sex of the same kind. It was always meant to be man and woman, corresponding differences coming together to produce something of value. When I have sex with anyone other than a woman, anyone other than my wife, I am not producing something of value. I am devaluing the very thing that God created to produce value. If we understand that, it brings sex to a God-honoring level that says, hey, no matter what you are thinking, if it is not with your wife, it is out of order. It will never produce anything of value because God intended for it to be solely within the marriage. Letter D, sex is not the joining of identical things or just anything at all. Watch this. Unless sex brings corresponding differences of man and woman together in the manner ordained by God, marriage, it promotes what? Nothing of value. Now, I've said a lot in a little bit of time. I want to give you a few minutes. Think about this. Talk about this. How is this different than what we tend to hear as we talk about marriage and sex and this whole concept? What's different about this, or what's the same? How can we begin to see this in light of promoting a God-honoring marriage? Take about 2 or 3 minutes. Talk about what you see. We'll come back and build on this a little bit more. All right, guys, let's take a look at the purpose. As we've kind of talked about the parameters, what's the purpose of sex? As we understand the purpose of sex, we can then understand how sex was designed to bring value when we operate within the parameters that God has set by fulfilling the purpose. This is how sex brings value to the marriage. Number one, God designed sex for procreation. It does not mean that if you're not having children, you are in sin. It just means that that was one of the avenues or one of the purposes that God brought about for sex that brings value to it. And too often I have to work with couples. They're saying, well, is there something wrong because God is not allowing us to have children? I'm saying, no, there is nothing wrong. That is one of the things, not that you can control that. Because if children are a gift from God, then who controls when you have and do not have children? God does. So therefore, you're not to be consumed with the idea. You are to recognize that if God blesses, to God be the glory, but if he does not, to God be the glory. It is one avenue by which sex brings value to the relationship. Here's the second thing. God designed sex so that husbands and wives may develop in oneness and companionship. Genesis 2:24, the two shall become one. It is through the sexual relationship that God intended for a husband and wife to have this, to produce oneness, to produce this thing called intimacy, as we'll see. It is so important, and companionship. God wanted sex to bring these things to the relationship. Letter C, God designed sex so that husband and wives may enjoy pleasure from one another in their union. One person asked me this in marriage counsel one time. Well, Pastor, how much sex are we supposed to have? I said, until everybody's satisfied. Now let that sink in. To everybody's satisfied. Well, I mean, but my husband wants it more than me, and sometimes it's the other way around. My wife wants it more than me. Well, guess what? Until everybody's satisfied, because sex is for your spouse. Yeah, but I don't always feel like it. Well, this is where you operate by faith and not by sight. See, we don't make it spiritual when it comes to sex. We want to make it all, you know, about what I feel in the moment. Sex is like every other thing in the marriage and every other thing that God has given us. It is meant to be given to the other person, not based upon how you feel, but based upon your faith. Yeah, but I don't always want to be bothered. Neither do I. Because I could be home with my wife right now versus being bothered with you. However, we don't always get to do what we feel like in the moment. See, baby Christians operate out of their mood. Mature Christians operate out of their covenant. The more of a baby you are, is what you feel determines if you will or will not obey. The more mature you are, it's your covenant with God that determines when you'll obey. And God will move you from a baby Christian to a mature Christian through trials. Thought I'd bring that back around so you can see how that works. And so the reality is, God intended, and that brings value to the marriage when people recognize, you know, sometimes my spouse may want it more than I do. That's okay. God intended for everyone to be so satisfied that there can be no temptation. Think about it this way. If you thought about your favorite food, whatever that may be, when you have eaten enough of your favorite food and you've just eaten and eaten to the point where your belly is full and you gotta, you know, take that little notch out of your belt because you're just full, and then somebody offers you some, what do you say? Oh, I am so full right now. I'm sorry, I can't eat another thing. So that's what God intended for your sex to be with your spouse, where both of you are so full that no one could offer and you'd be tempted. Why? Because you're satisfied. That brings value to the marriage. Think about it from this standpoint. Not only does God design sex so the husbands and wives may have oneness and enjoy pleasure. Letter D, God designed sex so the husband and wives may develop in intimacy. One of the safest places that's supposed to be in a marriage is the sexual union with your spouse. One of the places where you were meant to be the freest of who you are and where you are in life was supposed to be with your husband and your wife. If no one else is able to see you at your most freest, it should be your husband and your wife. And sex was meant to provide that type of avenue where man and woman could be the most naked and not ashamed because they are together. That is the value that God intended for sex and marriage. Anything outside of that is going to be a perversion, and it will never match what God intended. That's why singles having sex outside of marriage ruins what God intended, because now you are destroying what was meant to be developed through a husband-wife relationship. You are taking ownership of something that does not belong to you. These are the kind of dangers that we need to teach people to understand. Listen, sex is a beautiful thing, but outside of God's context, it will be perverted. It will never match what you're looking for. It will hurt you and not help you. So does that make sense so far? You look at these the purpose of sex. Let's talk about the principles of sex. Principles of sex. Letter A, sexual desires are God-given and are to be enjoyed with one's legal spouse. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 1 to verse 5. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 1 to verse 5. Very powerful passage as you think about this reality of sex. He says in 1 Corinthians 7, 1 to 5, "Now concerning the things about which you wrote, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. But because of immoralities, each man is to have his own wife, and each woman is to have her own husband. The husband must fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does, and likewise the husband does not have authority over his own body, the wife does. Stop depriving one another, except by agreement for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer and come together again so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control." God never intended for sex to be a negotiation in the marriage. God never intended for one person to hold out on the other person in the marriage. The idea that your body is not your own is understanding this, and this is what I try to really explain in premarital counseling. You do understand that the sexual pleasure of your spouse was never meant to be negotiated or withheld from your spouse. Your body belongs to them, and their body belongs to you. And God intended for this to be a continual mutual understanding so that this is not something that can be held against the other person, because that's where the devil gets involved because of the lack of self-control. And how many marriages have fallen because sex was up for negotiation versus being something that was automatically given to one another to the glory of God? So let's understand this. Again, letter A, sexual desires are God-given and are to be enjoyed with one's legal spouse. Letter B, sex was designed for your partner's pleasure. What's the key word there? Unconditionally. See, this is important because it doesn't matter your past issues with sex, meaning this, that can't be used as an escape. You don't understand what I went through before I got married. You don't understand. Those things cannot be used. They have to be worked through, knowing that God intended for you and your spouse to have this with each other without debate or negotiation. And too often people rush into relationships not understanding the reality of sex, not understanding how to work through whatever sin issues they've had with sex or suffering they have gone through with sex. And because they don't work through those issues, then they come and get married, and then these things pop up, and then everybody's struggling trying to figure out what to do. And Satan is having a heyday with porn and all the other stuff because these things aren't addressed and worked out. Part of my challenge as a shepherd is to help people work these things through, to help them to come to terms with, I understand you don't like her right now, and I understand that you don't like him right now, but at the end of the day, if you keep withholding sex from each other, there's going to be a worse issue here, because Satan loves to destroy marriages. And what's one of the best places to get into a marriage? By the bedroom. Because we won't be biblical, and we make excuses instead of making confessions. And that is one of the worst things that we can see in a marriage. Notice the next thing that we see here with the principles. Letter C, husband and wives are to be committed to fulfilling the sexual desires of their partner. What are the key words there? Regular and continuous basis. Now, that's very subjective. Newlyweds, that could be every day. Okay? People a little bit older, we just may be glad it's once a week or once a month. It's all good. It depends on where you are in your sex life. But what's regular and continuous for you is the key, not for somebody else. See, this is where you don't keep up with the Joneses. Honey, they're having sex every night. Okay, that sounds good for them. Is that who we are? Is that who you want us to be? Does that make sense? What satisfies you, not what is everybody else doing to affirm who we are? And once you understand what that looks like, that becomes the comfortable thing for that marriage. So I always tell people, hey, listen, don't get caught up in the sex-crazed culture that believes that a marriage is good because you're having sex every day, everywhere, and all that other stuff. What is working for your marriage is what we're talking about. What is continuous and regular for your marriage? Whatever that is, that's what you pursue in order that God is glorified and your spouse satisfied within the relationship. Notice the next thing here. Letter D, fulfillment of sexual desire should be equal and reciprocal as well as regular and continuous. So again, the idea for you and I is to recognize that God has given us a sex life that was meant to be God-honoring, as we recognize that it only has value when it's about procreation, when it's about sexual satisfaction for the other, when it's about intimacy, when it's about companionship, when it's about oneness. That is the value that sex was meant to bring to the marriage. Take a few moments now, review some of these things, and we'll come back. We'll look at a few more things. Take 2 or 3 minutes. Talk about what you see, what you think. If we go backwards, we've talked about so far, we've looked at the perspective of sex, we've looked at the parameters of sex, we've looked at the purpose, the principles. Let's put it together. What does this look like? What is the picture? How do we pull all this together in a practical way? First of all, if we understand it from this perspective, God honoring sex is between husband and wife. What's the key word there? Alone. With the purpose of honoring God and what? Satisfying one spouse. That's what it looks like. Secondly, God honoring sex is personal in that it promotes the value of another instead of using another as a devalued object of sexual pleasure. Your spouse was not meant to be a sex object. Your spouse was meant to be valued. See, that's important we understand that. Thirdly, God honoring sex is intimate in that it's not just a joining of bodies, but a what, guys? Joining of souls. And then lastly, God honoring sex is sacrificial in that it's the giving of oneself for the what? Consider the interest of others as well as your own. You never think about that when it comes to sex, but that applies as well. Ladies and gentlemen, if we were to really take the time to see it from this standpoint, it could change everything. The goal of life is not sex. The goal of life is to glorify God. Sex is not everything. Unfortunately, people have tried to make it everything. And in this culture that we live in, it's been made everything. People are sacrificing everything for pleasure of sex. Not understanding that that's a worship which will destroy you. You and I were meant to enjoy it as a pleasure of the marriage, not as the entire goal of marriage. But in enjoying it, we weren't meant to ignore it or minimize it as well. And so I hope that you can think about this. And again, as I was walking with the couple, and then we were walking through these things, and as I walked through this insight, with those men and my wife were walking with it with the women. There was a change. But again, there's some things that we got into that I, because we have a mixed crowd that I won't get into here, but there are some more things that we get into that gets a little bit more specific to say, listen, God created us with sexual organs. God created women with certain things and men with certain things. God had a function for that. When you understand how they operate as God intended, you can maximize your sex life to the glory of God and the satisfaction of your spouse. We have to talk about that in the church. And we have to do it with as much grace and tenderness, but with encouragement to say, listen, this is of God. This isn't something to tiptoe around. This isn't something we need to keep in the dark. We need to bring it to light. And where the issues are, let's work them out to the glory of God so that we can operate the way God intended. So I want to stop here for now, and I want to open the floor to talk. And some of you are going, well, I don't necessarily want to talk about sex. I want to talk about anything. So I'm going to relieve the tension. This could be for anything, and even for your friend that you want to help them out, okay? So we got about 15 minutes. I'm going to open the floor for you guys. What do you think? What do you see? And again, doesn't have to be limited to just this session. Anything that you've heard today, what do you think? What's going on? Yes, ma'am. The question is, do we have a book for people as it relates to sex and premarital counseling? We use our book called Happy Even After. That's a book my wife and I have, and you can get it in Amazon or any of those places, but it's called Happy Even After, and we basically walk people through that in particular, God's design for sex, and we get a little bit more specific. So that's why for singles we have So You Want to Get Married. We don't have them reading Happy Even After. They're not married yet, so it's a little different spin there. But some of that in there is to kind of help people. But where there are sexual issues as far as sin, I want to recommend a brand new book that came out this year that I think is better than any book I've read on the issue, and it's called Passions of the Heart by Dr. John Street. That is one of the most methodical, technical, theologically sound books I've ever read on the issues of sex. It's called, again, Passions of the Heart by John Street. That will be a wonderful tool to help anybody struggling with sexual sin, whether male or female, or just the issue of sex altogether. He does a masterful job of dealing with it from the heart, not just behavior, and then kind of helps you to kind of move through that. Where our book will say, okay, now that you've kind of worked it through, here's how you can operate the way God intended. Happy even after. Okay? Anybody else? Yes, sir. Question is it wrong for someone not to have children who can have children? I'm going to answer that this way. Some of my friends believe it's wrong. Some of my friends believe it's right, and I support my friends. Let me share my convictions with you, honestly. I believe that that is not appropriate, because when people talk about birth control, biblically, where does that fit in the God scheme of things? So I would be against it, looking at the fact that God created us to enjoy, and that's one of the values that he brings to marriage, if you can have children. So I would not support someone trying to not have children that can't have children. So, okay, anybody else? Yes. So the question is, how can a couple have sex where the person's in the military or chronically ill? Let me say this. You learn to get very creative without going into graphic details. So maybe that's a conversation you and I, my wife, can have. But you get creative. And this is where some of the things that can be useful between husband and wife alone. Anybody else? Oh, yes, yes. Singles and what, I'm sorry? Oh, my pet peeve. Yeah. How far to go? I always tell them nowhere. See, here's my pet peeve, and let me tell you why. The problem I struggle with singles, and this is why I wanted to spend the next 5 years, I didn't want to talk to married people anymore. I wanted to spend the next 5 years dealing with singles. We have a poor understanding of relationships. And what has happened is, because we have a poor theology of relationships, we're treating people who are not our spouses as if they're our spouses. And so I always ask a man or woman who are single and they're quote-unquote dating, tell me what you're doing with this person that if they were married to someone else, you would have to stop doing. Now let that sink in. Tell me what you're doing with this person that if they were married, you'd have to stop doing. Whatever those things are, guess what my next question is? So then why are you doing it now? So then how do I get to know someone? And I always say this, tell me how putting your tongue in her throat is going to help you to get to know her. Tell me how having your hand up her skirt is going to help you to get to know her. Does that make sense? Don't believe the hype that I have to get to know the person sexually to get to know them. That's a lie from the pit of hell. The Bible tells us in 1 Timothy 5, treat older men as fathers, younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, and younger women as sisters with absolute purity. So my question always to single people is this. Would you do that with your sister or your brother that you're doing now? Well, no, that would be disgusting. Then see them that way. Friendship, premarital counseling, then engagement, then marriage. Yeah, but how do I get to know them? The same way you get to know anybody that you want to build a friendship with. Because what is the goal? The goal is not to hang out, to hook up. You are ambassadors for Jesus and builders for Jesus. What would happen if you spent time with the opposite sex, not figuring out if they could be the one for you, but how you can help them to be like Christ? What would change in the relationship? See, I don't want to talk to married people anymore. I want to spend the next 5 years just dealing with singles, because then I would solve a lot of the marriage problems. Because guess what happens? That selfishness as a single becomes, guess what? Selfishness in marriage. Because I never knew that the relationship was to be bigger than my sexual desire. And the goal was not to see if this was the one. The goal was to invest in this person's life as a friend. That's very radical. I need about 5 years around the country just to spend time with singles to do that. Does that make sense? And that's not popular, what I'm saying. Because see, here's what happens with singles. The five T's happen. You spend time with the individual, you start talking. As you spend time and start talking, there's a lot of transparency. And as you have the time talking and transparency, you start trusting each other. And with the time talking, transparency, and trust, now you start touching. And then you go, I don't know how I got here. I know how you got there. Time, talking, transparency, trust, now you're touching. That which was to be held for marriage, you're doing as a single, and you can't figure out why it keeps happening. So then you change the person, but you don't change the agenda, and you keep falling over and over and over into the same thing. Isn't that radical? But those five things are beautiful in a marriage. They're terrible with singles. Why do you think people commit adultery? Time, talking, transparency, trust, then touching. What's missing in marriages? One of those things. Am I making sense, guys? So that's you pushed a button. I'm sorry. I'm going to get off my soapbox. I'm very protective of my single people. I love them dearly. And I believe that a lot of things could change if single people got back to the agenda that God called them to. The ultimate ambassadors and builders in the world should be singles. But we're too busy trying to hook up and hang out instead of grow up and get out to the glory of God. All right, I'm off my soapbox. Anybody else? I'm going to stop there. Any other questions? Yes, sir. I would take them to John, where Jesus challenged the woman who was living with the man that was not her husband to first affirm that God never called that to be. And then I'd take them back to the Old Testament, where it says the husband shall leave his mother and father and be one with his wife, not his girlfriend. Okay, and then I was challenging them that if you truly want to honor God, then he set things in motion, even submitting the governing authorities in this, that you should do this. And that God is not recognizing this as a marriage, as he didn't do with the woman at the well in John chapter 4. And there's a book on that. It's a little pamphlet. I can't remember the name of it, but it's something about why should we not live together? It's a little pamphlet, and the guy does a great exegetical job of explaining that, and I need to remember it. But maybe if you look it up, it's one of those pamphlets, why should Christians not live together? Or why should people not live together? He goes through the scripture and breaks it down pretty well. All right, we got time for one more before we call it a day. Yes, sir. Question is, you said that when you're working with couples, marital couples, you give homework assignments of having sex. When do you gauge when it's time to do that? The way I would do that is, first, I would make sure that there is some actual talking going on. We work through some forgiveness issues where we've recognized there's some unloving attitudes we need to work through first. That's not session one, go have sex. Is the wall down? Are we willing to deal with what God says about this relationship? Can we see where our unloving attitudes have been hurting one another? Are we ready to confess, repent, replace? As many of those issues are becoming consistently done, then the next step is, okay, now we're going to go a little bit closer now. Now that you have been confessing, repenting, and replacing, now you spend a little time going out on little dates here and there to try to build a bridge. I'm going to ask for the big one now. Let's start working on this together. So, again, some walls have been broken down, some confession, repentance has happened, some time has been spent just getting to talk to each other again. Then I move to the third step from there, right? Guys, thank you. So, oh, yes, ma'am. You can always have the floor, my lovely wife. I want you to talk about that. So I want you to come up, and I'm going to give you the floor.
How did I know he was going to say that, right? This happens a lot, more than it should happen. But when we're working with women, you know, this is biblical and this is God-honoring, but we live in a fallen world, right? We live in a fallen world where things happen. So typically what I say to her is, if you're agreeing to continue to stay in this marriage, then one of the things that you all need to do first is go to a doctor. And everyone needs to get checked out to see what's going on, to see if there are any diseases that he brought home or so on and so forth. We need not expose her, or maybe she's pregnant or whatever the case may be. We don't need to expose that situation. And then to let the doctor tell us now what is the best medical way to move forward. We still need to move forward in doing what God has said, but what does the doctor suggest? So I lean back on the physician's reference, unless he comes back and says something really horrible, like, you know, he has whatever he has, and, you know, he's going to turn green and you're going to turn green, whatever the case may be, you know. But usually we allow the doctor to give us some guidance on that, and then we walk them through the forgiveness process and setting up a new way to follow what God has said. But that's just always important, I thought, because in talking to a lot of women, they say, I know, but what about the medical aspect of what he's brought home now?
Amen. And that's why you make the big bucks. All right, guys, thank you so much for allowing me to have your time today. You are dismissed. Have a wonderful, wonderful day.